KALW.
I write songs about the hills of my home, and I'm talking about Tilden Park, where the poppies and the lupins and the wild iris grow.
Bluegrass music has taken root in the Bay Area.
Oh, you can't define that. No, it can't be defined. You just got to hear it.
We spend a day at the Berkeley Bluegrass Festival. Then we hear the music of Riding the Rails.
I just decided to take my last paycheck, went to Walmart, bought a bunch of gear. I hopped on a train and I headed down from Miami, Florida.
And the story of a cat in space that may or may not eat pizza.
So I wrote a script for a science fiction epic. It ended with this ridiculous cliffhanger.
The comedic minds of Mac Barnett and Sean Harris. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hanan Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Bluegrass is music typically associated with the South, but its high lonesome sound resonates with many listeners, whether or not they've spent time there. And between Hardly Strictly in Golden Gate Park and the much-beloved Bluegrass Night at Amnesia in San Francisco, the Bay Area has helped shift the stereotype of what bluegrass sounds like. Reporter Sarah Jesse went to the Berkeley Bluegrass Festival to listen in.
From a block away, I can see excited fans waiting to enter the festival, toting their own instruments and already tapping their toes. But even these super fans can't quite describe what the bluegrass sound is.
Oh, you can't define that. No, it can't be defined. You just got to hear it.
You're asking the wrong person.
I don't know how you would describe it.
Well, it's probably a merger of country and I don't know what else.
Musician Lori Lewis is used to people not knowing what type of music she plays.
People go, oh yeah, I've heard of that, or I like that, or whatever. And they might be thinking about something completely other than the music that I play, but at least they have some sort of inkling.
Lewis has been playing bluegrass in the Bay professionally for decades. By now, she has a pretty good definition of how to best describe it.
It's basically a singer-songwriter with a string band.
But even that doesn't quite capture the type of music filling up the next 3 days. And attendees aren't just here to listen, they're making music too.
Well, welcome to the Harmony Singing Workshop. So let's talk about harmony singing. We're approaching it from the bluegrass perspective.
There are hands-on workshops like this harmony singing one Lori's leading, or concerts where the audience is invited to participate.
Strong wind, strong wind, strong wind, carry me to heaven.
That's something else about bluegrass. It's accessible, and that accessibility is a part of the music's appeal.
You can actually learn enough of the repertoire that you can jump into a jam session anywhere and name, you know, I Wonder Where You Are Tonight or Little Cabin Home on the Hill, and people go, oh yeah, okay, what key?
Bluegrass is associated with rural southern Appalachia, states like Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Bill Monroe is credited with coining the term bluegrass in the 1940s, when he sang songs about the longing for home and his signature falsetto, The High Lonesome Sound, was born. That yearning is universal, and it helped the music spread. In the 70s, bluegrass started to enter pop culture through Hollywood. Think Deliverance and the Beverly Hillbillies. In the early aughts, it was the Coen Brothers movie, O Brother, Where Art Thou? Now, it's Rhiannon Giddens, the banjo player, whose licks were featured on Beyoncé's Country album. For some, bluegrass may seem like it's bound by tradition, like only certain chords or certain rhythms are the real bluegrass sound. But bluegrass is a music that's prone to breaking its own rules, and the Bay Area has always been a place where musicians push the boundaries of bluegrass even further.
The
In the 1970s, iconic bluegrass musicians like David Grisman and Tony Rice started experimenting with the genre here in the Bay Area.
That music was just taking off in all these different directions that it where it had never gone before, and it was exhilarating.
And that experimental style still resonates. Today, the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival in Golden Gate Park is called Hardly Strictly for a reason. It's known for bending the rules of the genre. From the outside, bluegrass is still largely seen as a white Southern tradition, but it's always been a blend of multiple musical styles. Standard bluegrass instruments include both the fiddle, popular with Scottish and Irish immigrants to rural Appalachia, and the banjo, which originated in Africa.
This is a music that is associated with whiteness that would not exist without Black musicians.
Leah Wallenberg is helping to lead a workshop at the festival here today.
It's in the name. There's blues there so deeply. Bill Monroe learned from Black musicians. It's been there from the very start.
Arnold Schultz was a Black fiddler who mentored Monroe, a white musician. Together, they created many now signature sounds. That kind of meshing is inherently American. But with racial segregation and more Black people leaving the rural South for big cities, it's like the music became segregated, too. Leah says people are starting to honor the true origins of bluegrass.
It in itself was an innovation of multiple styles of music, so that's just how new good things come about.
Lately in the bluegrass world, there's been discussion about the big tent, meaning everyone is welcome to learn, play, and listen to this music.
That's what we're all about.
And that's what's helped Bay Area bluegrass evolve to include younger musicians, like the band Salty Sally.
I'm Lucy Catter, and I play the fiddle.
I'm MK Martinez Griffith, and I play cello.
I'm Naima Nascimento, and I do guitar and vocals.
I'm Sophia Sparks, and I play mandolin.
We're Salty Sally.
Pretty wings, you're the prettiest thing. You're like Parker Posey in a magazine, with faded jeans and a crop top back in 93.
Salty Sally formed when they met as high school students at the Oakland School for the Arts a few years ago. I got the chance to hang out with them in the green room before their set.
There's lots of different, like, ways to play bluegrass. The reason I like bluegrass a lot is because I feel like everybody kind of does it differently.
That's Naima Nascimento, Salty Sally's guitarist and lead vocalist.
People think of bluegrass, they think like, oh, it's like strict and like you can only play these tunes and only this type of people can play it. Yeah, it's all for old people, but like there's actually a lot of young people like us playing bluegrass. It's still bluegrass, but it's turning into like this new thing as time goes on.
The members of Salty Sally grab their instruments and make their way to the stage. And their very presence up there is a sign that there's a new generation of bluegrass lovers who will keep this music alive and evolving. In San Francisco, I'm Sarah Jesse for Cross Currents.
I'd pick at my wounds until they bleed, taking the moon on a bended knee.
Sarah is a recent Audio Academy grad, and you can find more of her work at kalw.org/crosscurrents. And if you'd like the high lonesome sounds you heard, check out KALW's Bluegrass Signal, which airs on Saturdays at 4 p.m. right here on 91.7.
School day ends, but that's not the bell that rings for me. Sitting here till I make a
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hannah Ababa. As we just heard, bluegrass migrated to the Bay Area from southern Appalachia. And for Uncuffed reporter Joe Kirk, that music was the soundtrack of his travels. Joe is a musician, a singer, and an actor. And before he came to prison, he used to ride the rails, going from town to town playing bluegrass on his guitar. Joe spoke to fellow producer Spoon Jackson at Solano State Prison back in 2018 about the life he left behind.
I lived in Barstow, California, across the Stickerbush field from the railroad yard. Often I encountered hobos under the railroad bridge on my way to and from school. I dreamed of filling a knapsack with soda crackers and sardines and hitting the rails to nowhere. I had dabbled at hopping freight trains short distances to and from Little League baseball practices, but never any long trips. So when I met Joe Kirk, who had long rode the rails, I had to interview him on the art of hoboing.
Everything wasn't really working out for me in Nashville. I was working as a baker in this fancy French vegan bakery. And I hated my hours because I like to party every night. You know, you can't drink till 1, 2, 3 in the morning and be a baker because you go in drunk still the next day. And so it wasn't really working out, and my job, you know, wasn't going too well. So I just decided to take my last paycheck from my job, went to Walmart, bought a bunch of gear and everything else, and I took off, and I didn't even know what I was doing, and I hopped on a train and I headed down from Miami, Florida.
Yeah, so you learned hoboing on the fly.
On the fly.
So what brought you out here to California?
I was riding the rails.
You was riding the rails?
Yeah, I was riding the rails. I came out to California to trim some pot, get a trim job, and I ended up going to prison.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Had a little hitch in your plan, huh?
A little hitch in my plans, yeah.
Okay. You consider yourself a hobo or tramp or a bum when you was riding the rails? Or just, what was it?
All three.
All three?
Yeah.
Is there a difference between the three?
I would use the term hobo sometimes or whatever, but hobo was a term for, they used to call it homeward bound or whatever. It used to be soldiers when they come back from war, back after World War I or World War II, they would ride the rails and try to get back to where they went, or back home to their families or whatever. So that's where the term hobo came from. Everybody has a nickname on the rails.
What was yours?
Caveman.
Caveman.
Yeah. But everybody has a nickname on the rails. And you would have your nickname, you would write it out, and it would have little, like, you put like little anarchy signs in there or squatter's right symbols, and then it would have hash marks, kind of like a little train track hash marks or whatever. So it would be like a symbol for the rails or something like that. You know?
So it's kind of marking your territory.
Yeah, it's kind of marking that you've been there. So
that you've been there.
The other people know.
So how long did you ride the rails again? What, 2 years, 2 or 3 years?
No, about 5 or 6 years.
What did you do to make money?
Well, I either panhandled or I played music.
You played music?
Yeah.
What kinds of music?
I would play a lot of hillbilly music, a lot of guitar, mandolin, banjo type stuff. You know what I mean? Like country, bluegrass. Like, everybody loves bluegrass music. I don't care who you are.
And did you entertain other hobos, or were you a lone hobo? You always traveled alone, or did you travel with other hobo before, made any friends with it?
It was off and on. Sometimes I'd travel with other people, and sometimes I would travel by myself. I like traveling with other people, especially other musicians, because it was easier to form bands when we got into town. And if you're in a band playing music on the streets, you make a whole lot more money than you do playing by yourself.
So you and your friend would stop off in different cities, and you would put out a hat and play some bluegrass.
Yeah, bluegrass, or depending on the city where we're at, you know what I mean? Like if we're in New Orleans, we'd jazz it up a little bit. If you're in Nashville, Tennessee, you play some old country like Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash songs, and people would love that, especially all the drunks at night. And they'd come out to go bar hopping, and you know, they'd want to hear a Merle Haggard song, so you'd play one, and you'd get a huge tip for it sometimes.
Do you feel like your wings have been clipped by being incarcerated?
Oh, being incarcerated is the worst thing that ever happened to me, because I've seen absolute freedom. I've seen what it's like not to have a worry or a care in the world, and to be able to come and go and just keep going and keep pushing and keep moving on. And what jail did to me, it made me stay in one single space. And when I have to stay in one space for a long period of time, it drives me crazy. That's why I can never sit in rooms very long. I can never do anything very long. It's like it's almost like I have ADD almost in a way, but it's because, you know, I've been going for so long. Having to sit still is very torturous to me.
So the one song, again, that you would play to encompass your experience on the rails would be?
A song I would play?
Yeah.
Oh, music. Man. There's an old school blues musician named Mississippi John Hurt. And he's got this song called Lay Me Down a Pallet on Your Floor. And it's one of my favorite songs I've ever played.
Does it have words to it?
Oh, yeah.
Can you hit a bar?
Let's see.
Won't you lay me that pallet on your floor? Won't you lay me that pallet on your floor? Oh, won't you lay me down on that pallet soft and low? Lay me that pallet on your floor.
That was former Uncuffed producer Joe Kirk talking with producer Spoon Jackson in 2018. Joe was released from Solano State Prison in 2020. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer.
Make me a pallet down soft and low. Make me a pallet on your floor.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hanna Baba. Most cats don't go to space, but they do in the imaginations of writer Mac Barnett and illustrator Sean Harris. They're the Oakland-based creators of the comedic graphic novel series The First Cat in Space. It's the adventures of a heroic cat, a moon queen, and a toenail-clipping robot. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Mac and Sean about launching their best-selling graphic novel.
Mac Barnett, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And hello, Sean Harris. Welcome.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. You all are so interesting, so I'm really excited to talk to you. You have been friends since childhood.
That's true.
How did you guys meet?
We were surprised by our own story of how we met. We didn't know the truth about our friendship until just a couple years ago. The story that we always thought about our friendship was that we became friends in high school. We met when we were 14 years old. Sean gave me a ride home from school because he lived near my house. And we became best friends in high school. We were inseparable. We've been friends ever since. But just like 2 years ago, my mom was going through her photo albums and she found pictures of me when I was 7 years old on my soccer team, the Castro Valley Thunderbolts. And in every one of these pictures, I am with my teammate, Sean Harris. We were friends when we were 7 years old. We had our arms around each other. We were sharing our orange slices. It turns out that we knew each other far longer than we thought. And that the first time we met as really young kids, we were really good friends too.
You all shared orange slices?
Yeah, that's a big deal. I don't know, you know, any listeners who grew up in the 80s will know that sharing an orange slice on the soccer field, that's big.
It means almost that you inevitably did that thing where you smile at each other with the peel instead of your teeth.
Yeah,
yes, that's right. Remember that.
Yeah.
That is so sweet. This story, this series, The First Cat in Space, is far out. And so you got a cat in a, you know, like astronaut suit, and it's a very strong cat. We got a robot that clips toenails. We got a baby pirate that's bearded. I mean, there's all this dialogue in the book, and then the cat is like, meow, meow. And everybody's like frantic.
Yes.
And the cat is like, meow. And they're like, yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It is hilarious. What were y'all drinking? Where did this come from?
You know, I think it is just like, it's such a mix of so many influences. I think like 90s action movies for sure. The Hitchhiker's Guide books, the Lewis Carroll Alice books, the Phantom Toll Booth. Everything. I think everything that Sean and I like read and loved, we were just throwing everything into this. We want to create that sense that these guys are making it up as they go along. Because I think that that's a really fun way to hear a story.
And then you all took it to another level with the music. So there's a soundtrack. There are soundtracks with these books.
That's right.
And the music, I know that first song from the first book, I was doing some head nodding when I was listening to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Space is no place for a cat. Sean surprised me.
Space is no place for a cat.
And then he hit us with, you know, this David Bowie-esque song about how lonely it is to be a cat in space.
Yes, and Sean, you are a musician, correct?
Yeah, that was my first job. I toured and played shows. So yeah, I did that for a long time. And I would practice art by making posters and merch and music videos, animated videos, everything for like, I worked for my band for free. And then I worked for a bunch of other bands who I would meet on the road and get jobs from. And I always hoped that one day I would be able to make a book with Mac.
So you guys are laying tracks for the books. Is there any talks of this going to TV or film, this series?
Sean and I talk about it all the time, but I mean, nobody else does.
It's a movie in our head constantly.
Yeah, I think we would love to see it. It's sort of funny, you know, it did start on the screen, by which it was just something that Sean and I made over Zoom when we were stuck in our own houses. But we are bookmakers first and foremost, and that's really what we were doing, is we were making the first draft of a book and figured out a way to make it move. I think that there would be something really beautiful about it returning to a screen. We would love to, you know, stunt cast first cat, and you only have one line, which is, Sean, you want to meow? I don't want to step on Sean voices first cats. I don't want to do it. I don't know if I have the chops.
All right, here we go.
Meow.
That's beautiful.
I
mean, who could do it? Yeah,
I moved.
Who could do that better than Sean? Who could do it better than Sean? But you know, perhaps like an actor like a Meryl Streep and Angela Bassett. You know, we could get in there and really fill in some of the backstory Sean's just, he's not a professional actor. So we can only imagine the meows they could give us.
The delivery that Meryl Streep would do. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
You know, I've watched you all in other interviews and read interviews you've done, and just looking at your work and looking at you all on social media, and I've gotten Peter Pan vibes. But Peter Pan, who grew up but still let that inner child thrive. How do you all balance being adults and also to, and being, you know, artists, and also to feeding that inner child, still taking care of that inner child, letting that inner child run around?
I'm really inspired by the way that kids perceive the world. I think that just sort of the keenness of their attention, their observational powers, kids are constantly noticing things around them. They're really good at paying attention. And that's an artist's job, really, is to pay attention to the world outside you and the world inside you, too. I think that a lot of the things that make us great artists, they're skills that we have as kids. They're not things that we cultivate as adults. They're things that we have when we're 5, 6, 7 years old. And a lot of people, I think, get diminished as they grow up. So I just try to match the intelligence and the openness and the playfulness of my audience. I'm always inspired by children's example.
All right, here we go. Come on. Dance like a rock.
That was New York Times bestselling author Mac Barnett and award-winning illustrator Sean Harris. They spoke with KALW's Janae Darden. The first Cat in Space series is already in bookstores. This interview was produced by Porfirio Rangel.
Stop tapping your feet, you've got to dance like a rock. Never mind the beat, you can't move your feet are heavy rocks.
Tune in tomorrow at 11. We hear how laundry can connect people.
And so I hope that the laundry effort, it is about clothes, but when you meet that pragmatic need of people, they'll also start talking to you.
San Francisco's Ministry of Laundry. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Today's team includes Michaela Sia, Christopher Alam, Hussein Khan, James Rollins, Donity Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.